And it was probably through the first 4 years, it was like a battlefield. It was like a war. And it was, there were days where I did not think I was going to win this war. I mean, where it just seemed too hard. It just seemed like the hope of, you know, getting better, the hope of ever being a rational, productive member of society was just beyond me. I was too broken, too far gone.
She's bold. She's sassy. She's a woman over 50 living a life she designed on purpose with purpose. And now here's your host of Women Over 50, a life redesign podcast, Shelley Dryman.
Welcome to this episode of Women Over 50, a life redesigned. My name is Shelley. I am your host for this podcast. And if you are a first-time listener, welcome. And if you've been a long-time listener of mine, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate your support. Before we get started on this episode, I want to remind you that we have a Facebook group, Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. I'll drop the link down in the show notes. We have over 1,200 amazing and beautiful women over the age of 50. So I encourage you to join us for support, motivation, and a ton of resources to make this phase of your life the absolute best it can be. My interview with Anne has four parts, and it was truly an amazing interview because Anne is very vulnerable and talks about her journey at a time where she was misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder and almost died of lithium poisoning. This led her on a five-year journey to wellness. And she tells her story in this four-part series, and she also teaches us how to advocate for ourselves with the medical profession. So I encourage you to look down in the show notes where Anne has given us so many resources to use. And if you find that any one of these four episodes is beneficial to someone, please share it. I would really appreciate it. All right, on to my interview with Anne.
So as I was speaking about last time, our story ended with me getting out of the mental hospital. And I'll tell you one of the strangest things about that experience, not the hospital. I've mentioned, I think, enough about that and how, yeah. And I think this speaks to the level of dysfunction in which I'd been living, is that really with my family, it was almost like nothing had ever happened. And that was the weirdest part. I don't know how many times I've said to my therapist, it's bizarre. It's like nothing ever happened. And it really messed with my mind even, because it's like, oh, that was bad, right? Sorry, I told you.
When you say they thought nothing happened, was it that they didn't even acknowledge, like, you know, glad you're back? What did that look like?
It was right back to the same old shit. It wasn't like a wake-up call for anybody. It was like, well, good, you're out of there. You're not poisoned anymore. So let's just get together and move forward. You know what? Let's just say that never happened. And I mean, my grandmother has uttered those words. That's the kind of environment. Let's just say that didn't happen. Let's just soldier forth and move forward. But I knew what happened.
Yeah.
I knew this wasn't right. And I knew I couldn't continue with a life where that was just a little blip. And so when I got out, I was still, first off, I was still taking the Seroquel when I got out of the hospital, and I continued to take it. And I have to say, and I did want to say before I start any of this, I'm not a mental health professional. I'm not a therapist of any kind. My background's in law, and that's probably why I'm saying this part.
Yeah.
I'm not advising anyone to follow what I did. I'm not saying I did the right things. I'm not saying it's the right way. This is just how I went about ending this, moving forward. So this is not medical advice. I was still on the Seroquel, and I'm not 100% sure if I said it in the last one or not. When I was on the Seroquel, which I believe is, I can't remember if it's a mood stabilizer or antipsychotic at this point in time. I took so many of each. And as I jokingly said the last time, I think I took that one because it was just one of the last ones I hadn't tried. So yeah, I was on Seroquel. Yeah. But when I was taking that, I felt like, if I had to guess, this is what mania feels like. This feels like a manic state. I was very up. I was very alert. I couldn't sleep. I faked sleep in the hospital to get out. And I was still, if I could get in 3 crappy hours of sleep, that was pretty good in the beginning. I mean, I just was not sleeping. Plus, I had the withdrawal from the Xanax going on. And that can take year plus to actually get that out of your system and get you back to a place where you're not still reacting to not having. Yes. It's a nasty drug. It's a great drug while you're taking it. It feels great. It makes all those bad feelings just float away. But you'll pay at some point if it gets out of hand. Trust me. I wasn't sleeping. I was very much entrenched in this world of everything's fine. I'm fine. I was all along with, let's just pretend this didn't happen. You know, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I went back to that psychiatrist once. And then I also started seeing my new therapist. And in the beginning, I was just, it was the same line. Oh, it was just a little screw up. I don't know. I didn't really mean it. I just wanted to, you know, I was blaming myself. I took on all the responsibility for that. It was just, I'm bad. I did a bad thing. It was dumb. It's over, you know. So she's like, okay, well, you know, I'll see you. I'll come back in a couple of weeks, you know. And I'm like, okay. And then.
She didn't say to you, don't take this on yourself, or don't, this isn't.
Oh, you know, she didn't know me at all. And so when I came in, she had nothing to base it on, except I'm saying, I didn't really mean it. I just, you know, I was just kind of making light of it. This isn't a big deal, you know. And then we went into familiar territory for me, and that's my crazy eccentric family. And I could talk about that. I talked about that my whole life. I mean, there's all kinds of these stories. And that was a way I kind of dealt with things rather than thinking we were terribly dysfunctional. It's like, well, we're just interesting. You know, we've got all these wild stories and everything. They were messed up. And so I was very much in that mode. And then a couple months after I had gotten out of the hospital and I'd started seeing her, I started to fall apart again. I was not going to be able to hold myself up at that level for very long. And I was realizing this about the Seroquel, that I really had a feeling, because I knew it started with that, and I just had a feeling. And they say it's supposed to make you sleepier. It sure wasn't for me. That was by far not the first time I'd had the opposite reaction of what the drug was supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if I talked to her about it, but I decided I was going to go off the Seroquel. I was going to titrate myself off it. I titrated off enough drugs, and I believe I went to see him once, and again, he threatened me, just like he threatened me leaving the hospital and all of that. But this time, I had a really good therapist who said to me, he can't make you go back to the hospital now. And while it would be a while before I would completely believe that, and also told me, you don't have to go back to him. It's 100% your right to go find another psychiatrist. And it was in those first few months after getting out, it started to occur to me. So I went off the Seroquel, and while I didn't have a beautiful 8 hours of perfect rest, I was sleeping more. The restless legs were still there, but my sleep was better, and I was coming down now. I was not in that manic state. And that, and a couple of other drugs they tried while I was in there, when I felt that, I thought to myself then and at that time, I never felt this way on my own. I never was ever in my life in that kind of state on my own. And I started to think, I don't think I'm bipolar. And as I said before, I went along with the diagnosis because they offered me an answer. They offered me, here's a pill that will make you feel better. And I would have done anything. I would have. I told you I wanted electroshock therapy. I wanted anything to not feel that way. So I met with a new psychiatrist, and we went through, and actually, unfortunately, she stopped practicing right after that. And honestly, I don't think that was a bad thing, because we talked about it, and the more we talked about stuff, she was going right along with me. You know what I mean? It's like, they can only, what you self-report, but it was like, no, I don't see the bipolar thing. So through time and through exploring things in therapy, it was probably a year in, and I had an episode in therapy where something that had happened in my life, an event that had taken place, I was telling this event again, and it was like, it was awful, but it was like all of a sudden I knew the event as I had remembered it was not true. And it reminded me of, if you've ever seen the Harry Potter movies, in the one where the professor who has the memories that Dumbledore is looking at, and the memory's been altered, I've compared it to that before. That's what it felt like. It was like all of a sudden I could see the truth. That was huge. That was a really big turning point, that all of a sudden it was like, there's something more going on here. And it's not necessarily, it's not bipolar, it's not borderline personality disorder. I am actually, so I experienced that, and that was a weird thing. And then I can't remember who started talking about trauma first and PTSD first. It probably was me, because my therapist often said to me, she didn't have many clients who worked as hard as I did trying to get better. And that was always my thing. I was always trying to figure this out. And I think that is what tortured me my whole life, was trying to put together why I did the things I did, why I reacted the way I did. I couldn't make sense to my own self. And that's a terrible place to be, let me tell you.
You know, I think a lot of people sort of struggle with that, maybe not on the level that you do, but I think we all, I mean, I think that's a really good point, is that it's like, why? And you know there's like something, but you can't quite verbalize.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of people experience that.
Yes. Well, yes. And a lot of people experience trauma. And a lot of people, and let me tell you, okay, so here I am. I come from a family with means. I come from a family where my mother is a therapist. I come from a family with access to first world medical psychiatric treatment. And for 50 years, I fell through the cracks. Now, that's someone who had every single advantage in that situation, and look what happened. And that just shows you how, we can get into the system later, but how this kind of thing can and does happen. And it's not just in areas that are underserved. It happens all over the place. And I think there's a lot of reasons. I have a lot of ideas. But, and here's the thing. This is how bad it really was. There was a known incident with me and some family members when I was quite young. I knew about that my whole life. It was a sexual abuse incident. And then when I was in my 20s, I did therapy and came to some other realizations there. And yet, I still never would have said I was a trauma survivor. My mother wouldn't have said that about me. This is one of the little crazy things that happened. When we were at the mental hospital and she was visiting, they had a room that was like the trauma room where they worked on that. And she kind of looked at me. She's like, maybe that's something you could think about. And it was like, oh my God, I should have been in there every day. I have known people who will say to me, I don't think I've had any trauma. And I'll think to myself, oh, when you were 14 and your alcoholic mother killed herself, you didn't think that was traumatic? You know, it's like,
I want to interrupt you here. I like that point. I don't think a lot of people, especially, you know, like our generation parents who now would be 80 and 90 and grew up with that, you know, you just don't talk about that kind of stuff.
Right.
I experienced a lot of the same things that you're talking about, and it would be like, well, you know, that never really happened, or don't worry about it, or what's the big deal. But for our listeners who think, you know, your story resonates with them, I don't know if we talked about this in our first two interviews or not, but the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, have you heard of that?
Yeah. Well, I was going to bring that up.
Okay, go ahead then.
No.
Well, I just want, I mean, you go ahead and talk about it, but I want our listeners to know if you don't think you're suffering from trauma, but you had some stuff happen, it's a good thing to start. The ACEs is a good place to start.
It sure is. And I didn't know anything about that at the beginning of this. I had no clue. And so for me, going through that first year of therapy was just, it took me years before I could trust my therapist. It really did.
I wonder why.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Having, I think the she's just there.
Sorry, what?
I'm being sarcastic there.
Yes, I know. And this is why talk therapy is so important, that transference and that working through your issues with that person, that's why it's good. And I will talk more about that too. Yeah. So it took me a long time just to trust that she would not stop seeing me, just all of these things that came through from my mom. Yeah, so I have I never, ever would have said I was a trauma survivor, even knowing, even at that point, full on knowing and knowing about these experiences. It was like, that was the thing with my mom. Everything was downplayed. When I was in college, I struggled with bulimia. And I remember one day in college trying to tell her about that. And it was not unlike the incident when I tried to tell her I was going to kill myself the day after Thanksgiving. She looked at me and she said, "You're not bulimic."
Yeah.
And when I finally started throwing up blood, she believed me. You know, it was like, that's what it took. So, I mean, it wasn't just that I was just going through life ignoring things. I was having things shut down around me. No one wanted to deal with anything. No one wanted to face any of this. So probably in my second year of therapy, I read The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der
Kolk. Oh, I've got that book. Love it.
Yes.
Oh, it's such a great book.
Oh, everyone should read it. If you have an inkling that you've got a traumatic past, you should read the book. And it's in my list. I have a list I'm going to email you of some resources that if you want to include or not as a conclusion to this. But The Body Keeps the Score is huge. And when I read that, it was one of the first times when I could finally kind of, see myself as a trauma survivor and understanding about PTSD and understanding the misdiagnoses that had plagued me to that point. From the ADHD when I was in my 20s to the I think my first therapist put borderline personality disorder to the bipolar disorder, all of these diagnoses, and that is absolutely not uncommon at all. So when I read that, it was like someone understood me. Someone understood. And then I read The Polyvagal Theory by Stephen Porges, which is, I will say, it's certainly intense. The man is not a pop psychologist. He is a neurological researcher. So, I mean, but he did this handbook. And it's great. It's taken from his talks because he's trying to put it into a form that the layperson can understand. And up until his research, the vagus nerve was thought of as the fight or flight nerve. Uh-huh. And that's, most people are familiar with that, and that's not that unusual. What he discovered was the freeze.
Yeah.
And that is the behavior in the wild when, like, when you see a mouse that a cat has and it's lying there, and we would say, oh, it's playing dead. It isn't playing anything. Its vagus nerve has shut it down. So with two hopes. One, the cat will get bored and walk away. Two, if the cat decides to rip it to shreds and eat it, it'll be spared the pain of that. So when you're a mouse and that happens and the cat walks away, a little bit later you get up, you shake it off, you go off to get in someone's pantry again. Humans, unfortunately, are not so good at that part.
Yeah.
And humans, once traumatized, and most especially when they've experienced repeated multiple trauma, especially during childhood, this is a very possible outcome. Uh-huh. And when I learned about freezing, it was like, my life now makes sense.
Yeah.
My behaviors, my reaction to things, my way of you could say dealing or not dealing with things, everything made so much sense. And so from there, it was just an arduous process of unpacking a lot of shit. And part of the problems I had during this time was often when you go through things like this, the way that you learn to cope was to dissociate. I would have problems when I would try to talk about certain things. It was like the thought just left me. It was like there were some very intense times during these years dealing with really difficult stuff. And my therapist did use EMDR. Mm-hmm. Which is when they can either make your eyes move back and forth, or she used the tappers, so you have these little things.
Yeah.
And for some people, they can help with different things. For me, the way the EMDR really helped was when I would get in those states where I couldn't, when I would start losing my train of thought and that kind of thing, or when I was really upset by something and just not couldn't get myself back together, they helped a lot. That was definitely a very helpful tool in this. So we used a lot of EMDR. And that would get me to a calm place where I could talk about things, where I could see things rationally. But it was a very long time. Like I said, it's been 5 years. And it was probably through the first 4 years, it was like a battlefield. It was like a war. And it was there were days where I did not think I was going to win this war. I mean, where it just seemed too hard. It just seemed like the hope of, you know, getting better, the hope of ever being a rational, productive member of society was just beyond me. I was too broken, too far gone.
Well, you had like multiple things to deal with. First of all, not only the physical damage to yourself because of the meds that you were on,
right?
But, you know, just listening to you, it's the emotional damage caused on you as an adult because people around you weren't like listening, or you know, they just the physical and emotional damage as an adult, and then dealing with whatever you had to deal with from your childhood. It was like you had all these layers, and just get through the layers,
right? Exactly,
would take a long time.
It does, and you have to really want it. And and I will talk a little bit more about that to get to that point. It was coming from a family where secrets are everything.
Well, and everything. I think, you know, like we just said earlier, I really think that was my family too. And I really think that it's a lot of it. I mean, I know a lot of secrets still go on, but I think it's really prevalent.
Right.
And I'm so glad to see like the Me Too movement and people coming out and, you know, it's, and being really trauma informed and victim informed.
Yes.
Quit blaming people.
Exactly.
Let's get the program here.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem. And that's, you know, because I do want to get to that for sure. That, because I had opinions on that. do I think this could have gone a lot faster? Maybe. You know, could the whole experience have been much shorter? Maybe. Certainly a lot of things could have been better. And I have ideas why. But again, they're just my ideas. So
maybe that could be for another podcast.
Exactly.
We could rant about that.
I'm gonna try to smash it into this wrap up part. No, I would say that. So the last year was when I had some really big epiphanies. Certainly throughout that time, and the first 4 years, I would so feel like this is it. I've integrated. I'm here. It's finally happened, and then it would drop again, and that's. That's part of how this goes. I mean, I would try so hard and want it to be better, but it just wouldn't be. One of the things that I came to, and this helped me, Stephen Porges' book really helped me, the polyvagal theory, helped me to understand, especially medical trauma. And of course, obviously you'd say that those 5 years were kind of nonstop medical trauma, but this goes back way before that. I had some other incidents with doctors that were traumatic. And a lot of times a person will have, and I call it my ground zero trauma. It's surprising how often they can be medical in nature. And mine was, I was about 14 months old and the flu was going through the city where I lived. So I'm 14, 15 months and my mom takes me to the doctor and he's like, and she is 8.5 months pregnant with my sister. So he said to her, I'm going to put her in the hospital, meaning me, and I want to put her there for 3 days, and I want you to go home and rest. I don't want to see you there. I don't want you near the hospital. She'll be fine. So my mom did it, and I have often said that my mother, if a doctor told her to hack off her leg with a teaspoon, she would say, now, do I need a prescription teaspoon, or can I just use one that I have at home? You know, if a doctor says do it, you do it. So she leaves me at the hospital. Well, when she came back, she expected me to be kind of like you left your dog at the pound, and I'd be all happy to see her. I wouldn't even make eye contact.
You know, have heard, you are not the first person I've heard stories where they, you know, they leave their kid in the hospital and they come back. And I'm just like, what?
I was checked out. I wouldn't make eye contact. I was strapped into a high chair, and I was very precocious. I spoke really young. I was running by 9 months. You know, I could say the Pledge of Allegiance when I was 2. It was like my claim to fame in toddlerhood. And so I am sure, very aware that, and who knows what happened while I was there. Who knows how I was treated? I mean, it's really awful. I mean, if you think of that happening to a baby like that.
Yeah.
So when she shows up, I firmly believe that was the trauma that started the freezing. I really do. Because the problem is, and again, I'm not a neuroscientist. This is just me talking. But I believe that when you have that experience, now you are a much easier mark for people who want to abuse you, whatever, because you've learned to just shut down.
Well, I don't know that you call it a statistic, but, you know, research shows that people that are victims of abuse when they're young or raped or whatever, that
Yeah.
They're three times more likely to be, and you know, abused or raped again. So.
Yeah. Yes. And so once you learn, because all a sociopath or whatever needs to know is that you're not going to talk. Once they see you're just a shutdown kind of thing, you're an awesome victim. So
I like that you mentioned the freeze thing, because that's very trauma informed. The fight or flight or freeze, because a lot of women feel so guilty that they just froze. But it's a natural response to trauma. And I have, you know, was thinking while you were talking is, whenever I'm dealing with something I don't want to deal with, I'm trying to get better, it's like I get really tired and I just want to take a nap. So your freezing can manifest itself.
That's a typical freeze response.
And yeah, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to take a nap now. So don't feel bad if it's a natural response to a trauma, to a bad situation.
It is.
So thank you for bringing that up.
Definitely. It's hardwired into us. Mm-hmm. It is not a choice. That mouse isn't playing dead. Its vagus nerve has shut it down. Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening to us. I realized in therapy, and this is what happens, and I know I'm not alone in this. I was sexually assaulted in my 30s. I never knew it until I thought it was a bad date. That's how it read in my mind. When I actually realized it was like, oh my God, no, I was raped.
Yeah.
And I never would have called it that until I had these new eyes, until I had this new awareness. And it was like, because of course I did what all women did. Well, I could have fought harder. I could have, you know, all of these things that we say. And it's like, no. I was too damaged to fight any harder. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he knew that.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's, we get so into this, it's our fault. We shouldn't have done this. I should have fought hard, blah, blah, blah. If you have had a traumatic experience that caused you to freeze, good luck. You're not going to fight. Trauma survivors want safety. That's all they ever want. They did not feel safe in that situation. They lost their ability to find their own safety. So you spend the rest of your life after that trying to find safety.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard road. And it is not your fault. It is not your fault.
Yeah.
You can't behave any differently than you do. It's your brain trying to protect you.
Absolutely. So, amen to that.
Yeah. So in this last year, though, okay, so I kind of had this realization about this ground zero trauma. I was going to go to a training in Chicago, and I was freaking out about going. And that was when I kind of put that all together. That was my fear. I had never, up until that point, and I'm like 53 at this point, I'd never made travel plans on my own and gone somewhere in a hotel and stayed by myself. I've traveled all over the place, never like that. And I couldn't figure out, why am I so afraid? And that was when I kind of put all that together. And that was a really huge step.
Yeah.
Because I went and I did it. I was scared to death the whole time, but I did it. And it was a huge step. So past January, the shift began. I will definitely say that. Oh, and I should tell you too, at this point, I have not taken any kind of heavy duty psych med, like an antipsychotic or a mood stabilizer, for 4 years. At least 4 years. And I haven't taken even an antidepressant for 2 or 3 now. It's been a very long time. I'm on no medication.
Oh, well, good.
So, yeah. And I'm not, you know, medication has goods and bads or whatever, but if you don't need it, you don't need it. And I think I'm proof that it doesn't fix everything. In this last year, when it began, I came up with this, and I've mentioned this before on the page, about connection. And I sort of decided I needed to have more than just therapy. And that's really where I was. So I started a trauma-informed yoga class, and that was really cool. And Bessel van der Kolk in The Body Keeps the Score, yoga is a big thing he pushes. And it took me a while to understand why. I've done yoga for 25 years. But until I did the trauma-informed, it took me a while to kind of understand how it can work like that. So I did that. I took a pottery class. I joined a book club. I joined a women's group. I just started doing this stuff. And around that time, I also decided, I found out about face yoga and started getting into that, you know, and that's something I'm doing now to kind of try to get some footing again in my life, have something that I can do. But I also started, I had, up until this point, I like to write a lot, and I have been a terrible journaler. I've never been able to handle journaling because I would always get so in my own head about it had to be so good. And someone would be reading my journal like I was like on a
thin, you know, a great American novel. Huh?
Exactly. So it's like I couldn't just write my, so I could never do it. I could just not do it. So I do, I like to make art. I like to paint a lot. And so I thought I would do an art journal.
And I remember now you mentioning that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought, well, because it's such a pain to get all your art supplies out, I thought, well, I'll just have a little thing and I'll just do some art every day because I do love making art. So I started this journal, and at first it was like just kind of practicing some stuff and everything. And then one day something happened. I had a bad day, whatever, and I drew about it. And it was like all of this came out. And then the amazing part was I flipped that page over and I started to write. I started to journal my butt off. And I had the most amazing experience doing this. And that journal, that art journaling process is something I want to continue to share with other people because it was fantastic. And I think it's a good way for people. I'm sure you're engaging different sides of your brain when you do that because you go from that writing or the art part to the writing and what it brings out. And so that was really an amazing experience.
I find it very interesting, actually.
Yeah. So. I'm actually going to start teaching some classes in January. So we'll see how that goes. So throughout this year, adding these things in, adding in different, trying stuff out. I just started trying stuff out, started connecting with other people. And then I would say it has only been in the last few, maybe a few months ago, I finally had the shift I've been looking for.
Yeah.
And it's been months, so I feel pretty confident in that, in saying that. For a while, you know, if I got a week or 10 days, that was pretty good. But now I can honestly say to people, there is another side to all of this. There can be a next chapter. You can actually put these chapters into your past and move on.
Thank you for joining Shelley today on Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast. Be sure to join the ever-growing community of like-minded women on Facebook. That's the Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned Facebook group. Join today.